It's time for today's episode of the UGA Sports Live Podcast, recorded in front of a slightly tipsy studio audience at world-famous Champy's Fried Chicken. We will have the latest on Georgia Bulldogs football, basketball, and recruiting. Watch live and send us your questions on the 11 Alive Sports page on Facebook. Be advised, this podcast is off the record and not safe for work. Also, be sure to subscribe to the UGA Sports Live Podcast on iTunes and Google Play.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to this week's edition of UGA Sports Live, the podcast where we talk about all things UGA. We are here on the 11 Alive Sports page. Make sure to give those guys a thumbs up, if you will. We would really appreciate that. Thanks to them for letting us crash their page. Also, thanks to Champies for having us out here, as always. We're out here every Tuesday starting at noon. A little bit behind today, but that's because I've got the reins. Roddy is enjoying the beach.
Technical difficulties to get started, but we're rolling now, baby.
Right. Jake Roos here with UGASports.com. As always, we got the coach, Jim Donnan, with us hanging. And special guest today, former UGA offensive lineman Russ Tanner. Russ, good to have you, buddy.
Glad to be here, my friend.
Thank you for coming out. Thanks for coming out. Now, if you guys have any questions, please make sure to go ahead and send those in to us. We'll get to as many as we can today. First off, though, guys, I think the topic that merits the most discussion, the departure of Stetson Bennett. We talked about it last week. It was not totally unexpected that he made the move, but doesn't lessen the sting. Coach, just your thoughts real quick on Stetson.
Well, I'm happy for him because, Russ will tell you, everybody wants what's best for the kid, and I think selfishly it'd be great if we could keep him around here, but, you know, the realism is that it's going to be hard for him to play here anytime soon, and when he first came here, he knew what the situation was, but he's also done a tremendous job for us and helped us win last year, did a great job with the scout team. And, if you had a son that in this situation, I know Russ has a couple, it's just you gotta look at it like that, and I'm sure that's what Kirby said too. But you know, everybody says, well, he's just a walk-on. He's not just a walk-on. He's a tremendous athlete that really has a little bit of a limitation on his height, but he's very mobile, got a big arm, and I think he's got a really good shot at going down to where, if he goes to one of these Mississippi junior colleges and getting a D1 Power 5 scholarship and have a chance to play somewhere, don't you, Russ?
Is he going JUCO?
He's talking to Jones, JUCO, and maybe Mississippi Gulf Coast there.
Well, yeah, he's one of those guys. I mean, you've seen him year and year. Every year you coach, you've always got these walk-on kids who everybody on the team just loves because they've got a fire, they compete, and they make you better. And he's obviously one of those kids. And, you know, I think Dash had written something about it recently where he said basically the kid got on campus and realized, hey, I'm pretty good. I can compete. I can play with these guys. When you start seeing that as a competitor, I mean, you can only be the tackling dummy on scout team for so long and try to make that first team D look so good before you think, man, I'd like to maybe be the guy one time, be the man. So, you know, really happy for him. And there won't be a guy over there in the butts mirror that is upset at him personally. Now, from a Georgia football standpoint, it's a loss, because one, you only got, what, two quarterbacks now, really, with any real experience or ability to play?
Absolutely.
And then, the scout team portion of it is huge as well. So, Stetson Bennett's going to be a guy that we miss, no doubt about it. And Kirby and crew, I'm sure they've got a contingency in place, but it makes me nervous to have two guys.
Yeah, we're going to have some kind of backup deal where we got Hardman, in an emergency. We used to call it when you were playing here, and everybody calls it, the New York Life team, the insurance. if something happens catastrophic, what would we do? Like losing a defensive lineman, maybe moving a guy over on short yardage from the O-line or taking a receiver and playing him in defensive back and all that. But also – Nicole can play out of the, could do some stuff if we needed to out of the Wildcat, and so could Bishop. Of course, his situation right now we don't know, but, he has some athletic ability. And from what I understand, talking to Coley and Jay Johnson and some of these guys, we got a couple guys coming in that are pretty good athletes, But the thing that hurts in the case of losing Stetson is he knows the system and – you wouldn't lose anything him going in the game right now, comparatively speaking.
He could run the offense.
That's right. He could be a guy that could go in there and play around with the other guys, and they would help him. But, hey, it's a tough situation, but, more power to him. And
y'all had pretty good luck doing that with Hines back in the day, didn't you?
Yeah, Hines had some good genes, and he had done all that. But I think certainly it's been a big story, and we've talked about it, Jake, every week here for several weeks. So everybody on our, you know, that listens to our, or watches us knows how we feel about Stetson. And I know he was recruited out of high school, had some, you know, choices to go some different places. But I would say I wouldn't go to a 1AA school if I were him. You know, I mean, that's just going to limit him. You know, once he goes there, he'd have to stay there. As going to a JUCO, he can always go to a 1AA after this year if that doesn't work out for him. But he'll get a lot of exposure down there. That's a tough league. You know, yeah. A lot of good players. He'll definitely be the smartest guy there. That's for sure.
Yeah, no doubt.
Most of those guys aren't going there because they're athletic, because they're Phi Beta Kappa.
No, I think that, I think both of you guys really touched on it well. It's a loss. There's no doubt about it. I mean, ideally you want three scholarship quarterbacks, I think, on staff all time. Stetson wasn't, but he was about the closest thing that you could get. And he was a guy who knew how to run your offense inside and out. You mentioned, you know, the guys over in the Buttsmere building not being upset with him. They made that pretty clear on Twitter. You know, yeah. Malik Herring, Mecole Hardman, Monty Rice, I saw, they were shouting him out saying, hey, man.
Yeah, you're excited for him.
Yeah, this is a good look for you, good for you. And I think that what you said, Russ, is really important. It's something that we haven't maybe touched on as much. But, yeah, you know, I think that Stetson got here and realized, hey, I can play. I can play at this level. This is not beyond my talent. And, you know, I think it's a good move for him. Wish him the best. He's a great kid and big future ahead for him.
Yeah, well, we played last year with two scholarship quarterbacks, right?
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
So it's hard to have them stacked up like club sandwiches at quarterback anymore. You just look around. We see this Johnson kid leaving Clemson now. Yep. I think five out of the top eight highly rated quarterbacks from that class now, including Eason, have left, you know, around the country. And it's good to recruit guys like this, but at the same time, you know, you can't blame them. They got a shot to play somewhere. They're going to go
there. They're
going
to take a shot.
And
yeah.
That's
too much on the line for them.
Exactly.
You know?
Exactly.
Well, if there was ever any doubt about if Fields is going to play a red shirt, that's 100% done. There's 0% chance he redshirts now. He can.
Right. I think that was probably off the table anyway.
It probably was, but now it's not even.
Oh, yeah. It's, you know, not even a thought.
You can't even blink about it.
Absolutely.
That cat's got to be ready.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Jake Fromm is a tough son of a gun who's proven very durable and very good, but it only takes one guy that weighs 290 pounds coming around the edge and putting his face mask in your ribs before you're out.
I think Jacob Eason showed us that last year. And I guarantee you, Jake Fromm's got to be in there telling him that.
Roddy calling you up on a separate line?
I know. That's what it feels like. I'm sorry. I'm a little scattered now.
I can take over and run the show. I can run this thing, man.
If we're looking, we're looking ahead, though, and we're talking about, you know, what.
Now we got the groceries here.
What do they do? I mean, what you've got Fields, you've got Fromm. Do they try to sneak in a guy, do you think?
Well, there's always a shot of maybe getting a grad transfer who is a good, solid player that would just like to be on a winning team and know that he'd have a shot, you know, maybe of being around here, knowing he wouldn't be playing, but he'd be a great backup. Somebody with some Georgia ties, you know, that's always wanted to play.
That wasn't really a thing back in when you were coaching, was it?
No,
grad transfers weren't.
But you know, we had the four quarterbacks leave that one year after Quincy started, so we lost. But I think that would be a thing, or maybe some JUCO kid that you'd bring in and say, look, hey, come in and we'll redshirt you, but we'd only use you in an emergency. I'm just throwing out ideas.
Sure.
But it's definitely something you got to be concerned about. And then, you know, right now we're not exactly lighting it up on the 2019 quarterbacks either. And part of that's not our fault. It's just who we got. And
you got 3 or 4 years where you feel like you're pretty set right now.
Right. And these kids see that, and we've talked about it, Russ, on our show here when you hadn't been here, about we built up the recruiting with the idea, hey, we need you here at Georgia and all that, and then everybody needed to prove, our staff and players need to prove we could win, which we did. Now people can't use that. Well, they're not winning. Now they're using, hey, why you want to go there?
Right.
How much you going to play? But
yep.
As a really good player that was highly recruited, wouldn't you say – Hey, wouldn't you say, though, seriously, that that playing time is one thing, but overriding is if you really want to go somewhere, that's not going to keep you from going there, is it?
No, it doesn't. You know, I remember, you know, when you guys were recruiting me, I remember my favorite coach on your staff, I don't know if you remember who recruited me.
Jones.
Phil Jones. Love Coach Jones. And Coach Jones, I remember being in Wrightsville talking to him about just where was I going to go, what I was going to do. And this is when there was a transition, we'll just say that, right, away from the staff. And Coach Jones came in and said, look, I'm not going to be at Georgia anymore, but you need to go to where you're most comfortable. He's like, coaches will come and go. Players in front of you will come and go. You got to go to the place that you're comfortable, that you're happy, and you feel like it's going to be your home. And from there, you work your tail off and earn your spot.
So we did some good. We did a good job laying some pipe for you and Pollock, right?
There's no doubt.
coaches came to your place in your junior year?
I don't remember.
One of them did. I really made a lasting impression that I was there.
You know, hey, your coach. I was a young man.
Your coach is trying to show me around down there. I was getting lost in that big school.
Yeah, look at it. Zing it, Johnson County. Yeah, but he's right. I mean, you know, I remember. You know, at recruiting, honestly, you don't look at that as much. You don't look at the depth chart. Maybe the guys at quarterback and stuff do. Maybe the era we're in now where you see Justin Fields highlights on Twitter all the time. Maybe it's a little bit different. But I don't think they look at it as much as you think. They look at where they're comfortable, where their friends are, where they feel like they've got a good relationship with the coaching staff and the people there. And then they just roll because you can't control players. I remember my sophomore year, we brought in a kid behind me who was way more talented than I was. I watched him out there in spring ball for 2 days and thought, well, it's been a good run. You know, it's been a good run because he's a lot bigger, faster, and stronger than I am. But it just didn't work out for him. And, you know, for different reasons, he never saw the field. And I just thought, hey, I'm here, I'm working hard, I'm consistent, and I kind of backed my way into 3 years of playing time. So I don't think the guys, to your point, I don't think they worry about as much as people sometimes think the playing time stuff. You know, most guys, and some of them are pretty cocky, they think, oh, I'm going to beat them out. Like, they're probably not. But, you know. Self-belief is a powerful thing.
Exactly. Hey, Jake, enlighten us here about this weekend, all these kids on the recruiting now. You were up there at that Cam – I hate to give him any credit, but there's some good players that Georgia's in on right there that
No, it was a big weekend. Yeah, absolutely. We went out to the Cam Newton 7-on-7 tournament. He holds one every summer, Memorial Day weekend, kind of gets things going. And it's really, it's like the start of recruiting season. That's how you know things have kicked off. Got to go watch.
Does it cost $180,000?
No, you just donate to the church.
No, actually, they don't need that anymore. I actually saw him driving a Maybach out there the other day. That was I don't know if he was driving it or being driven in it. I assume probably the latter, but yeah, it's kind of the kickoff, though. I always say to summer camp season, recruiting season, and you know, this was another stacked up tournament. His team was out there. Super impressed by the fact that Cam Newton has got both Jaden Hazelwood, Georgia commit. I mean, the guy that I keep saying, I think a lot of people keep projecting as, you know, the next big thing at the wide receiver position for the Bulldogs. And then they've also got George Pickens, who's a kid that definitely is going to be a name that people are familiar with in this class because he's an Auburn commit currently. He's at Hoover High School. Alabama's in on him. Georgia was for a little while, but I think they kind of saw the writing on the wall. He's either going to be a member of the Tigers or the Crimson Tide. I don't think there's much choice there for him. But, you know, to watch
the quarterback.
You know, they rotate guys in on 7-on-7, so I wasn't super familiar with the guy that they had under center for this one. But watching those two kids operate, something special.
They can get after it.
Hazelwood is unbelievable and continues to be.
He's a
setting,
big kid, right?
Yeah, he's about 6'3" and a half, yeah. Probably. Very long, you know, kind of – he could put some bulk on maybe a little bit, but that's the only knock about
him. Compare him to Blaylock. I mean, was Blaylock there?
No, Blaylock wasn't there. But, you know, that's two wildly different guys. You know, Blaylock's more of a slot guy. He's a 6 foot, maybe 6'1", you know, real thin guy, but a lot of quicks, a lot of agility. Jaden is more of a guy who's going to be down there as a red zone threat for you, but he's also got the ability just to stretch the field if you need
him
to.
A lot of jets, too.
Yeah, right? Yeah,
but
absolutely.
He's a lot like Wims physically, and then Blaylock like Godwin, maybe.
Yeah, I think that's a very apt comparison. And the thing about it is he's like Wims was his senior year, after he had had some time to develop and kind of flesh his game out.
A little bit more polished.
Yeah, absolutely. So he's going to come in with a ton of polish to his game. But we talked to him. It was really interesting. He said that he'd been out here on a visit just recently. They went on a scavenger hunt. And they made him pull a Georgia sticker off of a boa constrictor,
you know,
or a python or
Brian
something.
Brian Gant's got that boa constrictor, that yellow boa constrictor. And
I see him on Facebook with that thing.
I mean, I don't want to go out there and take that thing and keep it for the weekend or anything. But from what I've understood, it's pretty mild. It's just overwhelming. It's, what's his name? Sunshine or
yeah.
something like that?
Yeah, you're right.
I guess you're just checking to see. That's kind of an interesting situation where you – go take the G off of Sunshine, you know, that's pretty good. But, hey, you know, that's just a good example of something to make the kids have a lot of fun. You know, they go on a scavenger hunt, and, you know, the team that wins gets $1 million, right?
Yeah. Now, you know what was
New
interesting?
Age recruiting, baby.
What
New
was
age
interesting, recruiting. Somebody pointed out on our board, and I thought it was a really a good idea to do this, is part of the scavenger hunt was go find Coach Smart. So Kirby didn't even have to necessarily sit around and wait on them or just, you know, sit there and play host. He got to go about his business, and they came to him. And I thought that was just a genius move on their part. That's how you kill two birds with one stone.
No, he's a
he
champion.
Was just moving around.
He
should have been. Speaking of, we are here at Champions today. We got the tender basket out in front of us with the fries, got the Champy sauce with it. Always a favorite. I bet.
Why'd you look down when you said that?
Well, because I probably have to cede it to you. You're the biggest man here, so.
still like you can play. How much over your plan weight are you?
Not why? Much. Why you see my motor? Dang.
You know, you look like you
about 5 pounds. About 5 pounds over. I'm in striking distance.
Yeah,
but that's no good. So I'm very fat at heart. I mean, I'm fat in real life, too. I'm very fat at heart. And then we put this out in front of me, and you ask me to concentrate on football. I'm hungry. My wife's on the way, so if I better eat one, it better be now, because after that, it'll just be the stink eye if I look at it.
She doesn't like for you to eat the fried food?
No.
Nah.
I asked her to make me some biscuits recently. She said if I ate any more biscuits, I was going to start looking like a biscuit. That'll pretty much deter that.
Yeah.
You know, Coach and Russ.
What about academia, too? I saw online where some guy said that he actually listened to our podcast, and he came here this weekend, and he took a picture of academia, a menu he had actually out there, you know, having something to eat. That's good.
A good friend of ours. And, I don't know if you've been out there yet, Russ.
Here comes the Tanner group.
I don't know if you've been out there yet, Russ, but academia, definitely worth your time. I'm drinking the IQ IPA today. I got out there the other day. They have some stuff that they've only got in the breweries that's awesome. And they also I had their fish and chips for lunch. It was awesome. The food there is fantastic. So definitely make sure you go out. Tell them that UGA Sports Live sent you.
Tell them the Rooster sent me.
That's right, yeah.
Rooster.
Now, obviously, this is arrival week. Guys coming into campus. Russ, I wanted to ask you, you know, coming up here, coming from Johnson County, you get up here. What was it like that first day? Take me back through that moment of moving
first
into
of
the
all,
dorms.
Were you able to come in the summer? Or
came
you
in, to, yeah, cover? I came in June or July.
Okay.
Yeah. And which, all right. I'm sorry, what was the question?
Well, just take me back to that. I mean, what was it like? I mean, what's going through your head as you're an 18-year-old kid moving up here from there and starting your life anew, I guess?
So, one, you know, I'm from Wrightsville, Georgia. And for those of y'all who don't know, Coach Donna can attest, ain't a lot happening down in the WV. Love it. Very glad to be from there, but there ain't a lot happening. So, me and Pollock had got to be friends through high school. We took all of our visits together and all that. We were supposed to be roommates. Well, that summer when we moved in – we didn't get to use the McWhorter Hall because they were doing camps there. So they put us up in Morris Hall. I don't know if you've ever been to Morris Hall, but it ain't where you want to go. I mean, when you go to take a bath in, like, the communal shower, you take your soap, your little flip-flops, and a good can of Raid because you're going to run into some bugs along the way. So me and Pollock go in, and the first day, we weren't in a room together. And I go in at 11 o'clock. It's about 11. My mom brings me to there. We open the door. We start walking in. And I'm from Wrightsville, right? I'm about as cornbread country as you can be at this point in my life. Still am, I reckon, but I at least have a little bit more culture. Walk in about 11 o'clock in the morning, open the door, somebody like pops up out of the bed. Well, in Wrightsville, about 11 o'clock in the morning, like you've already fixed fence, cut the grass, done something else, or else, you know, your daddy beat you. my guy popped up, and I ain't trying to say nothing about nobody, but from Wrightsville, he popped up, and my man had pink hair, black fingernails, and earrings down both sides all the way. I was like, Mama, we ain't in Wrightsville no more, are we? that was my first realization that, like, I was going to a really different place.
Yeah.
And, you know, I've said before, I felt like from Wrightsville – to here. I played single-A ball. I was a big kid, pretty athletic, you know, and football wasn't that hard for me. It didn't seem like in high school. And I felt like I was a really big fish, you know, in a swimming pool. You know, you felt like you're kind of the man. You feel pretty good about yourself. You come to Athens, and the first day at practice, you feel like now you're a minnow in the ocean. Mm-hmm. Like, everything just swallows you up. From being away from home for the first time, trying to figure out what do you eat? I got on some bus called Orbit and was late to my first meeting because I couldn't find the dang campus all the way around.
Yeah.
I saw Orbit. I was like, surely it goes around everywhere. It doesn't. So, you know, you got all that going on. It's just – it's overwhelming when – especially if you're a small-town guy that's not – hasn't been out and about that much. So, you know, and then the football kicks in. That's a whole other thing. So, you know, I just remember being just totally overwhelmed when I first got here, just trying to adjust.
Was there a guy that you – you mentioned, you know, the size differential and you feel – like you're the big man when you come on campus, but then you get out there. Was there a guy that you remember seeing that first day and you were like, oh, Lord, I'm in for it?
Well, you know, there's a bunch of big guys. I mean, they're all big. You get up here and you see, like, George Foster and Kevin Breedlove and these guys who are just enormous human beings on the offensive line with you. I remember getting to practice, though.
And you had to try to block Josh Millard.
Josh Millard, who was just crazy. And then, you know, you see Ken Veal, Gerald Anderson, these guys who are just monsters. And I remember getting out there at practice. I saw this little skinny guy, light-skinned guy. I was like, oh, I got him, number 99. His name's David Jacobs. I was like, I'm about to show myself up right here. You know, I'm about to handle that little guy. He's like 260. David Jacobs,
Quick. He
beat me so bad. I mean, he demolished me. He made me want to quit football after about 2 days. They would just laugh at me and pick me up. And he's like, Rook, you're going to be all right. But, you know, just remember, like, you don't physically dominate anybody anymore.
It's a big difference, and we're going to see these kids coming in here on Thursday. I think we got 17 scholarship players and then, you know, maybe 10 or 11 preferred walk-ons that'll be here undergoing that same thing you're talking about. The difference to me now, and back 18, 19 years ago and now, is the coaches can do so much more with you.
Yeah.
During the summer as compared to back then, you were with the weight coaches and all that, and you were talking about practice, but that was like when fall camp started.
Yep.
Now they got 8 hours a week with them to do some stuff, and these guys, that's how you get a guy like Thomas that was able to play early because he was here all summer, and hopefully Salyer's going to be the same. I just like for you to – our fans don't get to have you on here. How would you analyze the tackle situation now watching Wilson's development, and everybody knows about Thomas and Mays here now.
Yeah.
What do you think about the tackle situation?
Andrew Thomas, people are impressed with a lot of guys that played last year. Super impressed with Jake Fromm. You know, you look at some of these other young cats or anything, they're really good. What Andrew Thomas did last year is probably, to me, the most impressive thing that happened on the University of Georgia's football team. To play tackle in the SEC as a true freshman, and not only play, but to be arguably one of the best offensive tackles in the league.
No question.
It's unbelievable.
He did the same thing this year that the kid over at Alabama did last year.
Exactly right.
Yeah.
That's a right tackle.
It's unbelievable.
And so what do you think of Wilson and Mays, though?
Wilson better get it in gear. I'm going to tell you right now, I've been over to watch him practice a little bit. I've seen G-Day. And Wilson, if you just look at the eye test, like, Wilson's it. You're like, give me 10 of that guy on offensive line and you're there. But I'm going to tell you right now, he better get his act together or else he'll be behind Cade Mays. Like, Cade Mays knows what he's doing. He's a football kid from a football family who's tough and has got a mean streak in him.
And likes to hunt, too.
That's my guy. But, you know, you see, like, the guys, like, Wilson's from Brooklyn, New York. I'm not knocking Brooklyn, New York. But they don't breed big, nasty, tough offensive linemen. As a general rule, I think Wilson's a little bit more gregarious, a little bit more of a laughy, have fun guy. That's all fine and well. If he gets it together, he'll play a lot. But Cade Mays is going to push really hard for that position.
The good thing about Wilson, though, to me, if he was coming in now like this and going to get some A's, it'd be very hard for him because all. But having that year here,
makes
working under Pittman and realizing, hey, I just can't throw it out there. I got to go out there and develop myself. And he had all those guys diving at his feet up in Brooklyn. Now you got to understand, you got to come off and hit somebody. But that's a good situation to have two freshman linemen at that deal. All right, how about Salyer? What'd you think of him?
Like, you're not supposed to look like that coming out of high school. I mean, he's what, 6'5", 330, and
got
can move?
Weak, small thighs too, right?
yeah. Between him and Trey Hill. But, you know, Salyer's going to push. I mean, it's crazy to consider where we're at on the offensive line right now compared to 3 or 4 years ago.
Yeah.
It's absolutely crazy.
Yeah, I would say Hill and Salyer kind of make your mouth water. And
Hill's legs touch all the way down to his kneecaps. Yeah. Like, there's no separation.
We had the eyeball test for the spring game there. Everybody wanted to look at Hill's thighs and everything. I've had some coaches actually tell me that there, you know, that he ranks right up there in the top 10 of all our players on the Georgia team right now as far as just pure athleticism, strength, everything about him.
I would believe
that. We constantly, I mean, Kirby's staff always is rating the top 44 because you want to make sure you got a good counterbalance 22 and 22, hopefully, where you got it. But I think our squad, how about the center, since you're such an excellent center? That guy's done a good job.
He's done a good job. You know, it's funny. People talk about, like, Hill. They may move Hill to center and play. Center is the one position on the offensive line where you don't have to be a physical freak. Exhibit A, right? You don't have to be the biggest, nastiest road grader in the world. You got to understand the concepts. You got to know who you're calling the Mike linebacker, who's blocking who, and you're the go-between those big dumb tackles on the outside who don't know anything other than block man and try to communicate it back down. So at center, as long as you can snap the ball, snap the ball, that's important, and then know where you're going and get there quickly, you're fine. But Gilliard, he's got great leverage. Same thing with those guys. His butt and legs are low and wide. And that's what you want down in the middle. He's done a really good job. He'll be the center.
He's got good quickness too to go with it. That, you know, people run these offset looks, and he doesn't need a lot of help.
He can reach a guy,
and that's one of the things I always wanted in a center, is a guy that could reach a one technique without having to really waste any steps. And so we've talked about that. So what would you think about facility wise? You and I talked about this couple years ago one time from a Georgia standpoint, compared to these other places, take away our indoor facility,
right?
How do you feel like our facilities stack up right now around the league?
It's hard to say the weight room's not nice, because it's very nice, but it's just not big compared to, you know, and let's be honest, when you're comparing to Alabama, like, they're the standard. I mean, there's a few here and there that maybe not be as good, but like, the money being sunk into these places is crazy. But if you just think about it from a pure business standpoint, it makes sense.
No question.
Because, I mean, the dollars and the revenue that are being generated are good. So the weight room needs to be bigger. They need to have more flexibility so they can have the whole team in there, so that Coach Sinclair and his guys, who are phenomenal, by the way.
He does a great job.
So that they can have all the guys in there do what they want, when they want, not trying to fit it in and do it. The locker room probably needs an upgrade, just where the actual lockers are. They've started doing some of the lounge stuff, which is cool. I spent 2 years in a travel trailer on the AstroTurf. So, I mean, don't get me wrong, this is the freaking Taj Mahal to me over here. Mm. But comparatively speaking, the locker room probably needs a little bit of an upgrade. And, again, Kirby Smart is smart enough to know, like, he's a very, very good coach. Don't get me wrong. Like, he knows football. But he also knows that if you got those guys who put their shoulder pads on, they're better than the other kids got, the other kids on that. What am I trying to say? Better than the players on the other team?
That's right.
He's a recruiter, and he knows that. And all that stuff. The locker room redo, the stadium end zone redo, the weight room and all that is recruiting. Those guys want the bells and whistles. They want it pretty and shiny. And if you get two or three more five-star guys, that's the difference in us in Alabama last year, two or three guys.
Yeah, I think we've certainly made some tremendous strides there. But a lot of times, you know, this show is so Georgia-driven that everybody really doesn't have a comparison. And I think you've been around and you've had a chance, and you talk to guys like Pollock who go out and visit these other schools when he does game day and all that. But I think we're making some strides, but that's something that, you know, and financially, you know, making that big output with the indoor facility and now the work done down at the end zone is going to really help, because not only is it going to be a great place to, you know, bring in recruits, but it also game day, it will be centralized, and your coaches can really do a good job. You know, because sometimes this first time a kid comes to your campus is to watch a game, and that can make a lasting impression.
Yeah.
And you put them up in a recruiting room and doesn't have air conditioning and, you know, bad carpet and all that, which that's the way it was when I was here.
And they kicked the Letterman out of the Letterman's Club. That's the junky part. Like, let me go on my soapbox. Like, let's fix that.
Are y'all going to get to go back there now?
I hope so.
It should be. I think it's great. If you come to a game, and I know you want to take your family and all, but it's nice to go over and see some of your old bros before the game. And
it's the best.
Right. You can't beat that.
People ask me all the time, like, man, do you miss it? Like, no, I don't miss it. I'm a 36-year-old fat mortgage banker. Like, I would die if I was still doing that. But you miss your buddies.
Right.
You miss the guys. You miss, you know, your offensive lineman, that defense lineman who used to talk trash. You miss seeing Tyson Browning and, you know, Tony Taylor and all these guys you used to know and practice with. So seeing those guys, seeing their families, like, that's the highlight of a lot of the football weekends for us.
And I really believe that that is something that's been developed over here through Coach Dooley and on through, that these kids, Georgia through and through, and then when you go out and recruit, you talk about, hey, look at this guy here. He's now the head of this company or this guy, whatever it might be. But Kirby's doing a good job using that. But you feel a lot better if you just don't talk to him on the phone. You get to see him.
You like to see him, man. You like to hug him. You like to, you know.
Cedar family. Just like, you know, at G-Day, I saw several guys that had played with Kirby that were around Mary Beth Smart. And they were up there. You know, and we talked about this, but Brandon Tolbert, man, he's back there. You know, he's actually moved back to town here. And what a good player he was for me and for Coach Goff. But these guys are great ambassadors for Kirby Smart because they knew Kirby when he had holes in his tennis shoes, you know what I mean? And now they're behind him all the way, but they're behind the G too, you know? And
that's one thing I really hope they redo. Is the Letterman game day experience. Because the rule before has been, there's Letterman's Club out behind it, like between the stadium and the railroad track, basically, on that side of the stadium. And you could go in, take your family, free hot dogs, hamburgers, which was great, and then you had to leave and go out of the stadium, and you could at least come back into the Letterman's Club and hang out. But the last few years, they kick us out an hour before the game because the recruits are coming there. Then you're not allowed back in.
You better get here early now.
Well, you know, I'm sitting here, like, my family's right there. I've got an 8-year-old daughter and 2 6-year-old sons. Like, when it's September the 8th and it's 98 degrees in Sanford Stadium and we're playing Middle Idaho, Eastern Central State, like, we've got about a quarter and a half, Coach. We need some air conditioning and a Coca-Cola.
All right, that's good.
So,
let's,
you know, I hope they can open it back up and get us back in there.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Well, hey, let's
I want to shout out – yeah, I want to shout out our sponsors for sure. Athens Ford, one of our best ones, one of our top sponsors, not only here – but at UGASports.com. Make sure you go out and see them.
One of those on his vacation?
You know that he is, actually. Isn't that convenient? Yeah,
Roddy. F-150, he's big on
those. He rented the F-150, took it down to Orange Beach. He's driving it around. He says they're all over the place. He said it's like the unofficial vehicle of the beach down there.
Can't hide money.
That's what I'm saying.
Roddy's got it going on.
But make sure you get out there. They do have some Memorial Day specials still going on until the 31st. You can also do a lease on the 2018 Focus, $189 a month, zero down on that, or purchase $13,999. The Fusion's $199 a month for a lease. And they got some specials on the Ford Escape and the Ford Explorer. Also, $15,000 off on the 2018 F-150. So maybe I can convince Roddy to put me in one of these things somewhere along the way.
Especially if you're going to go on the road as much as you do.
You would think so, right?
I mean, anybody that leaves.
You got to look good, man. Ambassador for the brand.
You go all the way from the state track meet to Nashville. I mean, you got to style it out.
That was
Coach, you know, Roos is like famous for like hiding in the bushes at some of these guys.
I did do that one time. Yes,
it's good at that. I taught him how to do that.
If you're just joining us, we got Russ Tanner on with us this week on UGA Sports Live. Jim Dine here as always. I'm Jake Roos. Make sure you swing by and check out all of our sponsors. Your Pie, went there last weekend. Last week, had dinner. It was awesome. Stacked up the new peach and prosciutto pie. It's their seasonal. It's very, very good. Get out to Academia, have a beer. Athens Ford, as we said, our guys at Cable East, 365 Game Day, they're always supporting us. So shout out to all of our sponsors. Make sure you go by, shout those people out, tell them we sent you. Russ, I wanted to ask you, our good friend Dave McMahon sent me a few notes on you here.
Me and Dave go way back, by the way.
Pointed out that you're the third most recognizable person from Wrightsville. You may be the third most famous person from Wrightsville. Obviously, Herschel Walker, and then Lauren Smith right in front of you. I mean, who would you give the nod to? I think you got to be three, right?
I got to get him up there in second place right now.
You put me over Lauren?
I don't know. It's close.
Nah, Lauren's got a little bit more name recognition than I do. Although I'm not going to lie to y'all, I did get recognized by one dude at the Kenny Chesney concert the other night.
He told me,
he said, "Mr. Tanner, thank you for your service to the Bulldog Nation." Thanks, man.
That's a pretty good group. I mean, if you had you and Pollock there, where'd everybody else sit?
Well, we had like 18 seats, Coach. It'll spread out. When you roll with somebody like Pollock, you get all the seats you want, apparently.
Now, I wanted to ask you, Russ, one of the things that Dave pointed out was that you you played center for both David Green and DJ Shockley.
Yeah.
You worked with both of those guys. You know a little something about quarterback competition for that reason. You know, talk to me about, do you see any similarities with what's going on right now on campus as to when you were there?
I mean, yeah, there's no doubt about it. You know, when you sit there and look at the guys, you had Greeny and Shockley. You know, we look at them, they're just two totally different styles of quarterbacks. Same thing with Fields and Fromm. You look at them, they're physically different, their skill set's different, their background's different, you know, kind of the hype behind them's even different. You know, Fromm was a five-star quarterback, but he did not have Justin Fields' hype coming out. And Shockley was, I mean, I don't know if he was number one dual threat maybe when we were coming out.
Yeah.
He was, same thing. Greeny was very good. But Shockley was the biggest recruit of Coach Rick's first class.
He never ran that much in high school, though. His dad was a coach. He didn't run near as much as Fields.
Yeah, but he was the what do you call it? Kind of like the main guy for Coach Rick's first class. That's
sure.
Kind of the validation.
The centerpiece.
Point. There you go. When you got him, so you had him there. You know, and I cannot say enough. And both those guys are great personal friends of mine to this day. So it's not just me like riding like the buddy train here. But those two guys handled that situation better than anybody I've ever seen do it and probably ever will. Like, they both handled it like professionals. They both handled it like teammates who loved the G and were committed to what they were doing. You know, Greeny was always supportive of Shock, was happy for him when he did well. And Shock was, you know, he was the good soldier, man. He waited his time, didn't pout, didn't get mad, didn't downplay anybody, didn't sow any division in the locker room. And when his time came, he was a freaking stud.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you hope that same thing happens. I hope Jake Fromm has a four-year, super decorated career with no injuries and wins the Heisman and two national championships. But the chances are he's probably going to get hurt at some point in time, and you're going to need Fields to step up and be the man. So, you know, Fields knows if he bides his time and works hard, he'll have a shot. And hopefully he does the same thing. I think it's important to make sure those guys – Shock was really good at this. If anybody ever tried to question it, all you media types, you know, that would try to, like – y'all like to dig, right? You like to throw the barb that tries to get a sound bite. Shock squashed it immediately. There was never any dissension talk. There was never any downplaying David Green or why he should be there as opposed to Greeny. It was about the team. And he worked his tail off, and then he was ready.
Yeah, you did a good job. I think it's just hard to compare play. The situation is similar, that's for sure. I think it's just hard to compare it because of the different age, you know, the time in it and quarterbacks are just a little further along now because of all the camps and all the training than they were at that point as far as from being ready to play right away. You know, we redshirted Green. We probably should have played him that first year, you know, when Quincy got hurt. But I just think that and everybody on this show, I just think Fromm is a once-in-a-generation leader. But I think Fields is a once-in-a-generation player. So it's going to be interesting to see the competition there. If Fields can continue to develop his leadership and if Fromm can develop his passing to be, you know, a really good third down passer like he needs to be to win in this league.
It's Hulk Hogan and Andre the Giant, man. It's the irresistible force meets the immovable object. Those two guys, I agree with you. I think, and I've told people this a few times, I don't care to say it on here, I think that between Jake Fromm and Justin Fields, the competition should be so fierce and so the best man winning out to a point where I will be surprised legitimately if you don't get a national championship out of one of the two of them.
Yeah, the supporting cast is there, but you're going to see a very similar situation at Alabama with Tua and Hurts, and then at Clemson with the situation with Kelly Bryant with Lawrence beating down. And so we're going to see that all around the contiguous states here of a very good competitive competitive situation at quarterback, and you know that's what you want at every position. Just like you said, there was good players here when you were here that you had to beat out. But I think the fall practice is going to be the telltale. How much can Fields take on, and how much can Fromm continue to just you know, he really, I thought the best thing about Fromm last year is how much he improved from spring practice until fall camp. Spring practice, he had a pretty good game there because, but he didn't do a whole lot in spring practice. And then fall camp, he was a little sporadic. His arm was sore and all that. And then he got his arm a lot better, and he got a lot stronger, you know, and he did a really good job in fall camp. And he was ready when the opportunity was there, and he took advantage of it.
And he's that guy, man, when the lights come on, like, you know, he's just better.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know what it is, but he's just better.
He lives for it.
He's a competitor. That's right. I tell you what, I don't like these quarterback gurus working with him in the offseason. I know I saw online he's got this guy that he works with. I think he's got confidence in him. I think once you get in college, Joe, I like for you to work with your own coaches.
Yeah.
And that's not Jake doing it. I'm just talking about overall.
Sure.
I think, you know, hey, I'd like to see him work with their own coaches.
Yeah, we're seeing that more. What you're referring to is Steve Clarkson's The Quarterback Retreat, which has become one of the biggest events of the summer, I think, for college players,
well,
younger
players.
Well,
that's one thing, but he was with this guy from Ole Miss who was down there working him out that he's been working with over the years.
Okay.
And Steve Clarkson's a 1-2-day thing. I mean, everybody, all the best guys go out there. I'm all right with that.
Okay, so that's not as much on the radar, you're saying. It's this other guy that he's spending a little bit more time with. I understand that. I get you.
I'd be like a tennis player coming to college, and he had a pro that worked with him. Then he gets out here, and he's playing tennis, and he's still coaching him, and you got a coach. You know, that's.
I mean, what do you do if, like, that guy taught you something your coach doesn't like? I mean, could you imagine me going to Neil Calloway and saying, Coach, I worked with a center guru this summer. I know you told me to step like this, but I'm going to do it the way that guy did. How do you think that would have gone, Coach?
Not good.
Not good. That's exactly right.
You probably can't say what Neil Calloway would say to you in that instance. We got a few questions rolling in here, a couple recruiting questions. Mark Lee says, any recruiting news coming soon?
Yes, definitely. Major.
Yeah.
Like, you need to subscribe to UJSports.com. Insider information.
Russ doesn't have to write the news. That's why he's selling me out.
Look,
like that.
You told me and Coach that one right before we went on about that one that nobody else knew about.
Who's
like Blockbuster?
How many? Anybody coming up is going to be announcing anytime soon?
You know, there are a lot of guys who say that they want to get things done before the season starts. Now, whether or not they'll actually do it, we'll see. One guy I spoke to this weekend, Warren Burrell, Rivals 250 defensive back out of Northwood High School, a guy said, you know, I'm going to take a couple of official visits this summer. My plan is to get it done before senior year. I want to be able to focus. Says he's not planning on visiting Georgia officially this summer, so I don't like that for their chances, but maybe down the line. And a very interesting point on him, mom actually works here. She's in the School of Social Work.
Really?
She's a professor over there. So he's got some ties. He said, you know, I come and hang out there, and my mom could drive around the campus with her eyes closed.
They have a new dean. Well, maybe we can move her up to being the dean.
Sounds like she's lying for a promotion.
Yeah, we got to get her a promotion.
Like I said, nothing concrete necessarily, not a couple dates that you should be watching just yet, but just know that over the course of the summer, yeah, some things are going to go down for sure. Ab Harding asks, Josh Belk plans to enroll in August. What are our chances, and will we be able to flip Zach Pickens? Josh Belk, for those of you who weren't following along, four-star defensive tackle, was at Clemson, opened things back up. Now is looking around, took a visit to Georgia last week, South Carolina also involved. It's looking like the Gamecocks are going to be the favorite there. I think that that's just kind of been the case even before he signed with Clemson. It looked like it was going to be South Carolina right up until that moment. So I like Georgia's chances with Belk very much. I know that they have a compelling sell for him. I just think he ends up sticking a little bit closer to home. Zach Pickens, we talked about the other night, five-star defensive lineman, committed to South Carolina. We were hearing some Georgia buzz that day even, you know, that we heard things were going to go down. was not an easy situation, I'm sure, for Brent Venables, Clemson defensive coordinator, who was there. Coach, did you ever have a situation like that? You go out or you send a guy to a game and all of a sudden he heads somewhere else? I mean, that's got to be a real kick in the teeth, I think.
Yeah, we were recruiting Hart Lee Dykes at Oklahoma, who was ended up being one of the best players they ever had at Oklahoma State. And he hadn't even visited Oklahoma State. And Switzer and I were riding down the over in Houston because we were going to meet Mike Jones over there. I wasn't recruiting, but we were talking to somebody else, and we were listening to the radio, and they said that Hart Lee Dykes had just committed to Oklahoma State. Switzer drove off the road. He said, what? I mean, especially the fact that hadn't even been. And, you know, a couple years later, Oklahoma State got some really bad probation after that.
Uh-oh.
I don't know if it was because of Hart Lee, but but, you know, it happens. But Pickens, I thought we were in there, you know, from Anderson, South Carolina. You know, we lost a kid from IMG that was from Anderson.
Yeah. Stephon Wynn.
Right.
Yep.
Went to Bama. And how did he do?
It was a true freshman last year.
Did he play or redshirt?
I don't think he – yeah, I think he may have redshirted. If he played, it was very spotty. Didn't make a huge impact. But definitely a guy that – I mean, this staff was really hard on Wynn.
Yeah. We've got a good base over there in Anderson, a lot of good alumni, and then
it ain't that far.
Boog Powell's, you know, guy that played here is one of the coaches over there, and sometimes you just never know. But South Carolina over the years has had some real strongholds. They've gotten kids there, you know, when they started getting Clowney and all those guys there for a couple of years, they really did well in South Carolina. But the last couple of years, Clemson seems to have gotten them all. And
yeah,
this is a big hit for them to get a kid to go from, you know, a five-star D lineman, particularly
absolutely
with all the guys Clemson has gotten the last couple of years.
Oh, absolutely. I think that, Zach's a guy that everybody was in on, number 16 overall player. Georgia offered him almost 2 full years ago. He visited for a summer camp.
I have not.
You need to go check him out. He's something else.
He's all right?
Yeah, he's all right.
The guy's got some real quickness.
He moves well to be as big as he is. And, his thing is he gets back there in the backfield super fast, and then when he's back there, man, he can lay a lick. He can generate so much power out of that lower body. He's forcing fumbles.
All right, I want him. I want him to sign him
up. Tell me about the guy that you – put us on early on
a Boygabee.
Yeah,
Justin
how
Boygabee.
Are we doing with him?
All right, so yeah, out of Forest Park High School, down there south of the airport a little bit, and a guy that just was a freak, under recruited, I thought, kind of out of the gate. I had like 3 offers in December. Now he's probably knocking on the door of 30.
Dang.
Hard read, though. Hard read on Justin. He is a kid who Georgia definitely wants. I mean, everybody wants a piece of him. But he doesn't give a lot away. He's very smart, very calm, doesn't play the media game very much, says all the right things and doesn't show his hand. Auburn's a major player there. Georgia's a major player there. I think that, Alabama's kind of hanging around there a little bit. You've got Florida in there. There are a number of schools that are really competing hard for him, and he's not showing his hand. We don't know about when he's going to decide. We don't know where he's going to go.
We got to get Hines Ward over there. You know, Forest Park.
Get on down there.
Give him the Hines Ward Memorial
Sign
Scholarship.
Him up.
But that, I know when you told me about him, I always like to watch the guys, and to me, he's a difference maker, D lineman. That, you know, right here, 50 miles from us, we got to.
We need him,
we
coach.
We need him bad. That's the one area where we got to shore up and get a few more D linemen. Everybody knows that. But
and a lot of
so
people.
So anybody else out there on the horizon? I know the kid from over Hinton is going supposedly committed to Michigan.
Yep.
Academic structure there and all that. Who are some more D linemen that are out there?
So Jalen Humphreys is definitely a guy to watch out for. He's at Mountain View High School in Lawrenceville. He's probably your true 0-1 technique. He's a guy who's going to get in there, clog up the middle for you. Auburn's on him very hard as well. In my opinion, he's a must-get guy for Georgia because he's so close to home. He grew up a Dog fan. His family's Dog fans. He says he's entertaining a lot of schools. LSU and Florida are two he likes a lot. But if I'm Kirby Smart and I'm doling out the orders, I'm telling Trey Scott, that kid cannot get away from Lawrenceville. We can't lose a kid from Lawrenceville who serves that kind of need.
What's his size?
Jalen's about 6 foot, 3.5, probably 3'10" right now, and just built like a brick house, man. He
a
is
big
thick.
Youngin.
Yes, he is.
You know, I saw a stat that we might get Russ to comment on, but it was talking about the guys that were drafted last year. The average height of the D lineman was less than 6'4"
yeah.
around the country compared, you know, everybody's, hey, you want these 6'5", 6'6", guys. But most of these D linemen now that are going in the NFL highly drafted are 6'4" or less.
Yeah.
What do you attribute that to, Russ?
Leverage. I mean, low man wins. That's one of the oldest sayings in football, and then it's right. You know, I remember we played Florida, back to an experience that I had. We played Florida one year. They had a guy named Mo Mitchell. We actually thought we had Mo coming here to play offensive tackle. Went to Florida as an offensive tackle. He was 6'8", about 360. They ended up moving to nose tackle. And I remember lining up. You know, I'm 6'3", 6'4", 290. That's how big I play. And I line up. I see Mo Mitchell come out there. And the Joker lines up against me, 6'8", 360 pounds. And I thought, if he hits me, I might, you know, might be it. But – he would try to hit you with the first punch.
I'm definitely going to hold him.
Absolutely. There's no doubt. And there's a lot to hold when a man's that big. But what would happen with him is if he didn't beat you on his first move, he ends up standing up. And I don't care how big you are. If I've got my head in your chest and my hands under your arms, you ain't going nowhere in the SEC. You're just not big enough, fast enough, strong enough. So those guys that are so big and so tall, there's more area for them to grab. And they end up just standing up and getting pushed. You look at the guys like who are the top two in the NFL right now? Give me who y'all off the top of your head, top two defensive tackles in the NFL right now.
Aaron Donald. And
Georgia boy.
Cincinnati
Bengals.
Geno Atkins.
Maybe there's one or two others in
yeah,
there.
Yeah, sure.
With but both those guys are – Dave can tell us how big Aaron Donald is. But Geno's like 6'2", 290.
Yeah, Aaron's 6'3", I think, on his best day.
They're low guys. The thing is, when they go from their shoulder pads being this high, sorry for anybody not seeing us, like, you know, 6 feet tall,
yeah.
And they drop it to 4.5 feet tall, they don't slow down.
Right.
They're moving that fast, and they're like a cold spring, where those big long guys, they just don't have the quickness, the fast twitch, and then the explosion from a low center of gravity standpoint to make you hurt. And those little short guys that are powerful, they're the ones that you can't handle.
Absolutely.
That's why I think Clark – for us is going to have a good shot of being a really good nose, don't you?
I agree. I totally agree with you. I mean, you know, you look at guys like Grady Jarrett, for example,
yeah.
Somebody that was not very heavily recruited by Georgia. Clemson ended up snapping him up and made a great player out of him. He's having a tremendous NFL career. It's the new model, I think.
Dave said Geno's 6'1", by the way.
Okay. I think we just got to look at that, though, and everybody's talking about these massive D linemen, but you got to have the quickness and then
– that's right.
Maybe the edge guys, you can get the taller guys and like that. But, you know, Von Miller's not that tall. I mean, you know, but he the jet coming off the edge. But
Matt Todman says Trevon Walker is a freak. I definitely think Georgia should like their chances with him. He's
yeah.
a guy that is and has been a virtual lock. I said the other day, and this may be an unpopular opinion, but, you know, I'm not going to be that impressed if Georgia lands Trevon Walker because – I feel like I could be the defensive line coach if Trayvon Walker would come to Georgia. I think he just loves Georgia. I think that he has for a long time. I think it's just kind of been the understood landing
spot. Still got to get him, though.
You're right.
You got to get him to say, yes, I do, marry me, all that. I mean, you got to get him over the hump, you know.
You're right. You're right.
And so it's
– there's work. There's always work.
But we're dealing with the negativity of people talking about, you know, hey, why you want to wait in line and all. And, but that position there.
They can't say that about our defensive line.
That position there is one that we can make a really good push. You're going to have some tremendous linebackers, secondary, DNs playing with you. We need you to come in. We can just say, hey, one of our guys came out early, Thompson left. You know, there's a lot of different reasons. But that's where I think getting this kid from Notre Dame will give us some good solidarity
yeah.
there. You know, the graduate transfer has been good to us when you look at Mo Smith and – you know,
and D-line is a position
Catalina
where that grad helped
transfer. Us enough. I mean, he helped us win
sure.
being a tackle. He's playing for the Redskins, so
yeah.
you never know. And then, of course, Nislik last year was a terrific punter. So, So let me give us a couple more questions.
All right. This was a good one from Mark Schreiber here. He says or Schreiber, I'm sorry. He says, usually first game kickoff times come out in Destin. The SEC meetings are going on. Make sure to be following at UGASports.com. We got Anthony Dasher, Braving the Storm for everybody down there. But he says, the first couple game kickoff times come out in Destin. Russ, is there any preference to kickoff times from a player perspective?
I hate 12 o'clock.
I mean, that was pretty instantaneous.
Yeah, I mean,
couldn't you be a little more specific?
I hate 12 o'clock. 12:30 is not preferable either. I will say this: the only time I like those games were we're playing, you know, the Southwest Missouri State, you know, fighting green
jackalopes.
Beans. Yeah, whatever they are. Because you wanted to be able to watch other games, especially on big game weekends, you want to be able to get back and see those, see your family, go to the tailgate, then go and have a decent time in Athens, Georgia, on the evening. But as far as preparation standpoint, I hated those games. Just because you got to get up so early. Wake up time's what, 6 a.m. wake up call?
Right. You got to eat 4 hours before the game.
Yeah, you're eating at 8 o'clock. And not like – and when you eat then, you can't just have like a bowl of Lucky Charms and a piece of English toast. Like, you got to eat.
Yeah.
Because you're not going to get another real meal before that. Because 11:30, 12, you're not eating a big meal right before you go out there and play.
Sure.
So those games, I didn't like – you had to get up early. And I didn't mind getting up. But I didn't like having to get up early and then stack the food in so early. And then it's just go, go, go to try to get to the stadium. You know, I like those other ones where you get up. I guess, like, the mid-afternoon games are my favorite. Just because the night games, again
– long wait.
Yeah, long wait
plus
was big.
The eating and different.
Yep. You try to figure out your food situation again. People are going to laugh, say, this is the fat boy. I'm telling you, that's everybody. You got to plan your meals so the fuel is in the machine. And then the other part about the thing about, like, these college kids, and my kids don't understand this yet who are sitting over there, but, like, you know, they say there's nothing better than being a Georgia Bulldog on Saturday night after a win. You play 11:30, the game's at 7:30, 8 o'clock. You don't get done until 11:30.
Right.
By the time you get back, get changed, I mean, you ain't headed out to, you know, your grandma's house.
Yeah,
until,
right.
Like, 1 in the morning. So,
sure.
I like those mid-afternoon games. It's you can eat two good meals, you know, get a breakfast early, get another one about 11:30.
I guarantee this. I would say Austin Peay has got SEC Network 12 o'clock all written over.
All day.
Oh, no doubt. No doubt.
Wouldn't you? Because you got Washington playing Auburn. You got Louisville and Alabama. Is that on the same day?
I think so.
You got some pretty heavy games. But Austin Peay is going to be in the SEC. It'll be the 12 o'clock SEC. Now, the next week, you got South Carolina. I would think that'd be 3:30
CBS. Game.
Yeah, absolutely. That was actually part of the question.
Yeah,
was,
so
he was saying,
that was a really long answer to a really short question.
Well, he was saying.
Don't quote me on that, but wouldn't you say that Austin Peay's a really good shot for 12
yes,
o'clock?
Yes, definitely.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, this guy, Mark, and, specifically said.
And
you
I
know,
want to apologize to the fans that from UMass that I might have offended. I looked up UMass the last couple years. Do you realize that they actually had some pretty good wins, played, you know, went to the end of the game against Tennessee, you know, played Mississippi State extremely well, beat Appalachian State last year, which was a, you know, a bowl team that won.
They're a good team.
So, I mean, they're not a laydown like I thought. You know, they've had a terrible record, but they've played some really good teams. But beating Appy's pretty impressive, I think.
Yeah.
Don't you?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Because Appy played us good last year. And so that's going to be a little tougher game. And then Middle Tennessee's going to have one of the best quarterbacks we play all year. You know, the coach's son is really he's a lefty and a good thrower. And they run that same offense that Washington State runs. You know, they've got their coordinator used to coach for –
the air raid.
Yeah, he used to coach for Mummy up there, and he's the offensive coordinator.
All right, we're getting ready to wrap things up here. I want to hit one last question. Dylan Brooks says, any shakeup with N'Kobe Dean's recruitment? We did talk to N'Kobe last week. He kind of gave us some good insight. Definitely a kid that's going to be on the rise, maybe even probably in five-star status. Horn Lake, Mississippi. He's a outside or he's an inside linebacker. He's about 6'1", a guy that a lot of people think can maybe replace some of what you lost with Owen Papo deciding to commit to Auburn. But we'll see. George is very involved with it, though. You know, he loved it. His parents loved it. It was a good overall visit. So keep
Horn
an
Lake,
eye on the coach.
That's
there
a name, isn't it?
That's yeah, man. That's right on the border, up there, right by Memphis. It's very, very north.
So
Mississippi.
We got the kid from Memphis coming. Maybe we can talk to each other. He's a good D lineman.
He is. He's a very good Bill Norton. And it seems to me that they're making a big push in that area, just in general. Memphis
Wouldn't
is an
you,
area.
With the way Ole Miss is playing right now?
Yeah, I agree.
There's some opportunities, what you're saying.
That's what you do. I mean, you go into nothing against Ole Miss, but, you know, when a team's on probation and they're looking at in the footprint of seeing all these SEC teams and they see Georgia out there. Just gives us instantaneous credibility to go in there and get some players.
Absolutely. We're going to wrap things up here. I do want to shout out our sponsors again, Athens Ford. Make sure you go by and see those guys. Roddy will be back next week to talk about what a great time he had in the F-150, I'm sure. Make sure to come out here to Champies. Remember Wednesday night, Soul Food Night.
Do you know they had collards here on Wednesday night?
I'm out on collards.
What? Oh, man.
Just because I'm from Wrightsville don't mean I like them.
Nice. We're going to just ignore that he said
they are
that.
Good collards.
They're delicious. But they got the jalapeno cornbread and the mac and cheese
with
that,
too,
on Wednesdays. Make sure to get out. Shout out Robert Wall when you see him, Cable East. Your podcast.
That's
out
it
there.
For this
Check
episode of the UGA Sports Live Podcast. Tune in next week for more Georgia Bulldogs news and notes from Athens.
And 11 Alive, make sure you like their page. We'll be back next week. Thank you so much for our special guest, Russ Tanner. Russ, thank you for being here.
Good job, Russ.
And Jim Donnan, as always. I'm Jake Roos. Get over to UGASports.com. Thanks, guys.